The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show as we kick off another week. In this part of the world, we're coming to you an hour earlier. The clock's moved back here over the weekend in the UK. So we're speaking at noon today. It's still 7 a.m. back home at our headquarters campus. But it's noon here in the UK, and with classes resuming earlier this morning, it did cut down on some of the prep time that I typically have for these programs on the day of my my college class earlier in the morning. But that said, I think we will make some, I hope anyway, some pretty good progress through a fair bit of material that I'd like to get through. It looks like it's going to be quite a week for politics in the United States. It's the last full week of campaigning before the election next Tuesday, November the 8th, and with all of the latest revelations about Hillary Clinton's private server and the email scandal and the FBI deciding on Friday to reopen that investigation, well, we'll just see how that this week plays out as both sides are really going at it, and many on the sides of the side of the Democrats panicking right now, as it looks like that this scandal won't go away for Mrs. Clinton. It's worsening with each day. I thought I'd go back just to set the stage for some of the latest developments in U.S. politics. I thought I'd go back to a piece written a couple of months ago. This was following the FBI's decision not to indict or to suggest prosecution for Mrs. Clinton. It's an article Ben Shapiro wrote in early September, so about 2 months ago, saying that Hillary's email scandal is taking down the FBI. That's what Shapiro concluded. He writes here, he just kind of summarizes all that was uncovered in this investigation initially, and how that here at the end of all of this damning evidence for the FBI to then decide that, well, we'll not go forward with any kind of prosecution or a recommendation that the Department of Justice not indict her. But here's what Shapiro had to say. According to new documents from the FBI, again, this is 2 months old, according to new documents from the FBI's investigation of Clinton, the agency was fully aware that Clinton lied when she said she set up a private server in order to utilize one BlackBerry device. She used 13 mobile devices and 2 phone numbers, as it turns out. It says the FBI knew that Clinton's aides destroyed old BlackBerries by cracking them in half or hitting them with a hammer. The FBI knew full well that Clinton had passed classified information over her private server. She admitted that she didn't even know how classified information worked, instead stating that she thought the C appearing at the top of documents probably had something to do with alphabetizing private server email use. Or alphabetizing, private server email use. That she brought her BlackBerry into a secure State Department area, that she never turned over nearly 18,000. This is all confirmed by the FBI's original investigation. That she never turned over nearly 18,000 work-related emails, that she discussed an undercover asset on the server and put his family in danger, and that she refused to take BlackBerries from the State Department out of fear they could be discoverable under the Freedom of Information Act. That's not all. Shapiro says the FBI also allowed Clinton aide Cheryl Mills to act as Clinton's lawyer during the FBI hearing, even though Mills was a material witness. In doing so, the agency granted Mills legal privilege where none existed. And the FBI didn't bother asking Clinton whether she intended to hide information. Officials gave her the benefit of the doubt every single step. of the way, and then the FBI recommended to the Department of Justice that she not be indicted. And so, as Shapiro concludes here, the fix was in. That was in early July, about 4 months ago. And I mean, after Mr. Comey made that announcement, and we went through some of that on this program, where he talked about everything that she did wrong, and then at the end said, of course, our recommendation is that she not be indicted. You had conservative pundits like Shapiro, who were furious. The fix was in. The Democrats, meanwhile, they were singing Comey's praises, talking about how brilliant the man was to conclude with that after such a thorough investigation. The Washington Free Beacon put together this montage of sound bites from Democrats expressing their love for James Comey. This was just 3.5, four months ago. Here's the montage that they put together.
There was an extensive, as you know, Brett, investigation by the FBI under the direction of a wonderful and tough career public servant, Jim Comey.
This is a great man. We are very privileged in our country to have him be the director of the FBI.
No one can question the integrity, the competence.
And he's somebody with the highest standards of integrity.
I'm going to continue to be scrupulous about not commenting on it, just because I think Director Comey could not have been more exhaustive.
Amazingly, some Republicans who were praising you just days ago for your independence, for your integrity.
Despite your impeccable reputation for independence and integrity,
and your honesty instantly turned against you because your recommendation conflicted with the predetermined outcome they wanted.
Republicans have turned on you with a vengeance.
If you indict Comey's integrity, then you are making a big mistake.
Well, Director Comey, whose reputation for independence and integrity is unquestioned.
But why is it that before that decision came out, everybody loved James Comey? He was the guy.
They didn't lay a glove or a finger on James Comey, and he walked out of that room with his integrity and honor intact.
The FBI director is a career public servant. He served this country with honor.
Jim Comey is widely respected as a guy of integrity.
They have attacked you personally. They have attacked your integrity. I honor your professionalism and your service to our country.
Given the depth of that investigation and his own credibility, I think his conclusion, you know, probably gets it right.
That's the collage, the montage that Washington Free Beacon put together. They're the ones that put the music underneath all of those statements, coming from Democrats, who, as I say, were really praising the director's conclusion back in early July. Well, now everything's changed. Now Director Comey has decided to reopen the investigation. And now many of these same Democrats, this is politics in the United States, but many of these same Democrats are on the attack against Comey. I saw one tweet this morning comparing headlines from the Washington Post, July 6th. This is one from nearly 4 months ago. It says, Republicans attack Mr. Comey for doing his job. That was an editorial piece in July. That same newspaper had an editorial piece on Saturday that says, James Comey is damaging our democracy. The media is panicking. The left-wing media is panicking. And so many of the Democrats supporting Hillary Clinton, they're also in full panic mode. With this coming just less than 2 weeks before the election, this is what the New York Times had to say yesterday, Sunday's edition. Hillary Clinton and her allies sprang onto a war footing on Saturday, opening a ferocious attack on the FBI's director. So much for no one can question his impeccable reputation. Now it's a ferocious attack against Mr. Comey a day after he disclosed that his agency was looking into a potential new batch of messages from her private email server. It says here, this is the New York Times, treating Mr. Comey as a threat to her candidacy, Mrs. Clinton took aim at the law enforcement officer who had recommended no criminal charges less than 4 months earlier for her handling of classified information as Secretary of State. She was relatively quiet Friday night, Mrs. Clinton was, deciding on how to come out in response to this. But then at a campaign stop, I think this was from Florida, on Saturday, I mean, she came out, as the New York Times says, with this ferocious attack against the FBI and in particular Director Comey. This is clip two.
I'm sure that some of you may have heard about a letter that the FBI director sent out yesterday. Well, if you're like me, you probably have a few questions about it. It is pretty strange. It's pretty strange to put something like that out with such little information right before an election. In fact, it's not just strange, it's unprecedented, and it is deeply troubling because voters deserve to get full and complete facts. And so we've called on Director Comey to explain everything right away, put it all out on the table, right? Now, of course, Donald Trump is already making up lies about this. He is doing his best to confuse, mislead, and discourage the American people. I think it's time for Donald Trump to stop fear-mongering, to stop disgracing himself, to stop attacking our democracy. We can't let him get away with this, can we?
That's Hillary Clinton from Saturday, a stump speech down in Florida. Her response to James Comey's decision to reopen the investigation into her email scandal, or that private server that she had set up, even while serving as Secretary of State. She finds Comey's actions now deeply troubling and unprecedented to come so soon, or so close to an election. And of course, she mentions Donald Trump there, the one she's going up against in this election. And Trump, of course, was quick to capitalize on this, to say that we can't have someone this corrupt in office. Let me switch back to this New York Times piece from yesterday. It says, for months, the FBI... I mean, just listen to this. This is America's political decadence today. For months, the FBI had investigated whether Mrs. Clinton had broken any laws by using a private email server while she was Secretary of State. This past summer, Mr. Comey said that Mrs. Clinton had been extremely careless by allowing sensitive information to be discussed outside secure government servers, but that the agency had concluded that Mrs. Clinton had not committed a crime. The investigation was closed. But then on Friday, here's the New York Times, but on Friday, Mr. Comey notified Congress that the agency had discovered emails possibly relevant to the investigation that belonged to Mrs. Clinton's top aide, Uma Abedin. The emails were discovered on the computer of Ms. Abedin's estranged husband, Anthony Weiner, during a separate investigation into allegations that he had exchanged sexually explicit messages with a teenager. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And now Donald Trump's surging in the polls, at least in the national polls. And judging by the reaction of many Democrats over the weekend, they may not have much more dirt to dig up and to expose Mr. Trump on this week. We'll see, I guess. I'm sure they're going to pull out all the stops in response back to Donald Trump. You heard a little bit there, I guess, from that clip I played for you, the fear-mongering and so on. But we'll see what happens as this week unfolds. But you have commentators now wondering, could Donald Trump actually win this? It seems like for a month, 2 months now, he's been so far behind that many were writing him off. And now he appears to be surging in the polls. It looks, though, like if you look at it state by state, he's still got an uphill battle for sure, as the Electoral College really does favor those on the left. But we'll see what happens. We'll certainly see what happens. And it's the words that Paul gives us in Romans 13 as God inspired him to write. Of course, this is what we come back to with respect to elections. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, Paul said, for there's no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. I mean, whoever ends up in that office is going to be the one that, well, the one that God allows to be there. We're coming right near to the very end of this age, and we see Manasseh, we see the United States of America, the once mighty superpower that the whole world looked to for leadership. We see America turning into a spectacle with this kind of political decadence on full display. All of the ugliness, the corruption, the lies, the deceit, the cheating, the scandal. There is a piece here in the Spectator. .co.uk, the UK version, written though by an American who said he was at a dinner gala in New York last week listening to a distinguished British historian by the name of Andrew Roberts, who was there in front of an American audience wondering if it wasn't starting to look like that 1776 was a mistake. In other words, that the Declaration of Independence followed by the Constitution of the United States and this experiment, he was beginning to wonder if it was a mistake. And he was pointing to this vaunted American system and how that it was today producing so much corruption. And this American author said when hearing that, as a red-blooded American, it really made him angry, as he'd go to bat for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump rather than side with someone, an outsider, who took this position. Well, he was sitting there listening to this speech, just before the FBI decided to reopen its investigation. And here's what he said at the Spectator. Today, though, it looks as though Roberts has a point. In the course of investigating Anthony Weiner's career, it says a little bit later, the FBI has found new emails that may implicate Hillary Clinton in the abuse of classified information. Partisans are once again trading denunciations in an effort to show that on the other side, or show that the other side's candidate is most damnable. They have a point. Beyond the endless debate over which side's candidate is more hateful, or a more troubling trend has emerged. Notice this. It says, prominent writers on both sides of the aisle have begun to argue that a lack of concern for ethical and legal norms is a virtue rather than a vice. And then he goes on and gives a couple of examples. First from the left, talking about all of the corruption surrounding Hillary Clinton and how that this actually doesn't show weakness. It shows real political strength, because she operates in gray areas. She knows how the system works. And the same can be said for some of Donald Trump's vocal defenders, who brush aside the vulgarity, the scandal, what should be troubling red flags, to say that, well, this is great. I mean, he's becoming a radical against respectability. He's going to bring down the system. He's going to make all of these changes. And never mind what kind of a an individual he is or what the character might be like. This author at The Spectator says, most Americans would still prefer a head of government who is also a plausible head of state. They want someone who not only is willing to work for the future, but who can serve, who can also serve as a role model for our sons and daughters. But more and more people seem to be taking a different and darker view. It says if writers like, well, he mentions these two guys that defended their candidate. If writers like these are any indication, Brits aren't the only ones having doubts about 1776. Well, you can go down one statement after another, as I might get to in the next segment, from the founding fathers, who said that if character and morality, if religion and morality, if they don't serve as the bedrock foundation to this American experiment, it's not going to work. This is what they repeatedly warned. Well, you know why we are where we are. The United States is in the midst of just a stunning decline. And the leadership today, it's prophesied. Isaiah 3 says it would be upside down. And really, the leaders are just a reflection of the society at large. We'll look further at this subject of character with respect to leadership coming up in the next segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You can email the program if you like at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
In one of our booklets, the Character in Crisis booklet, we've got a section in there that shows how character really does impact leadership. And you can look through the Bible from beginning to end and see one example right after another. In my Epistles of Paul class, of course, the reoccurring example that you see on display in the book of Acts and in Paul's writings is the example of Paul himself. And how that, as he said to those that were in the true church of God, look, follow me, follow my example, follow my steps. And he said to the brethren in Corinth, he said, you've seen my example, you've seen what I've done. I've been working on the side as a tent maker just to help fund my own needs. There were those in the congregation, of course, that were criticizing his leadership. But his works, they spoke for themselves. He set an example for the brethren to follow, and that's what you need in a leader. Look into the book of Genesis and see the example of Joseph, who really had to face a lot of adversity, sold into slavery by his own family, his own brothers. And yet look at how he rose to such prominent heights in Egypt. I mean, Potiphar entrusted him with his entire estate. And he got into trouble there because of a sinful woman, Potiphar's wife, who tried to seduce him. Joseph sprinted away from that evil, from that temptation. And then the wife lied to Potiphar and said that Joseph was at fault. And so Potiphar had him cast into prison. And even in that dire situation, Joseph really served his God. He obeyed God. And he was viewed as a leader in prison. And when he was freed from prison, he ascended to the second highest position, political position, in Egypt, right underneath Pharaoh. You can see that in Genesis 41. And through it all, and you can see this in the example with Potiphar's wife, Joseph was a man of upstanding character. And under his leadership, Egypt prospered. Egypt prospered. Here was this carnal king, or Pharaoh, who basically told the people of Israel, or rather the people of Egypt, to look to Joseph. Go to Joseph, it says in Genesis 41, and do what he says. I believe in him, the Pharaoh said. And the Pharaoh didn't even know God's truth. But he knew enough to know that Joseph set a right example. You listen to what he says and do it, he told his people, the Pharaoh. He told his people this. Well, then you know the story, with his brothers eventually showing up, and then what happened to the Israelites there in Egypt as they multiplied, and in the generations that followed Joseph, there was a Pharaoh who came to power who didn't know Joseph or appreciate this history. And so God had to work miraculously to set the people of Israel free. And he raised up another God-fearing man whose name was Moses. And through this man, God delivered his Ten Commandments in codified form to the Israelites. All these commands that Jesus would come along later and magnify. And under the righteous leadership of Moses, Israel again prospered. God led them out of Egypt. They became a great nation. And the responsibilities on Moses' shoulders, well, he had a lot to keep up with. His father-in-law, Jethro, gave him some wise counsel in Exodus 18, saying that Moses should choose able men from the people, men that feared God, men who are trustworthy, men who hate a bribe. He said, select those kinds of leaders to serve under you, those who are honest and trustworthy in their own personal lives, in other words. If you don't have leaders like that, you're going to run into problems. Read Deuteronomy 1 as well. There Moses, I mean, he's basically showing how that he had to have righteous judges underneath him. People who didn't respect persons in judgment, but leaders who would be fair and objective. What did God say to Joshua after Moses died? It says in Joshua 1 and verse 8, this book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth, but you shall meditate therein day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then you shall make your way prosperous, and then you shall have good success. This was the key to prosperity and success. Stay grounded in the laws. Stay grounded in these truths that Moses gave to you. God-fearing character, in other words, directly relates to our prosperity, to our success. Well, God blessed Joshua and the Israelites under Joshua's reign because of those laws that they obeyed, because of Joshua's righteous leadership. And then after Joshua died, everything fell apart in Israel. And you see the gross immorality among the people, and then you see the leaders during that era that were also immoral. You can study through the book of Judges and see all of these pretty graphic illustrations of this eternal truth. You can see how, in that book, how the character of a leader really does affect the people, and vice versa as well. But throughout that book, the book of Judges, there's this cycle of sin that they keep repeating. They get into it. They experience all kinds of curses and misery. And then they cry out to God as a last resort. As a last resort. And in some of those cases, God raised up a righteous leader like Gideon to lead the people out of captivity, to lead them out of sin. It's amazing, really, given all of the problems that the United States is facing today, that there aren't more people crying out to God or calling upon leaders to cry out to God. Look at the spectacle that the United States now is. Look at the political decadence that's on full display every day. Well, in the case of that period of Judges, in the end, it says in that book that every man did that which was right in his own eyes. That's what it's like in the United States and Britain today. Everyone doing what seems right. And in some cases, you have the surrogates of these politicians out there saying, well, look, okay, there's the corruption, there's this, there's that, but that's really a point of strength. This is really what we need to deal with the system. We need someone who can be dishonest, who can play the games. We need someone who can operate in gray areas. That's what the people want, and that's what they're getting. There is no positive outcome to what happens on November 8th. Whatever it is that happens, you can hear it here first. The United States is not going to be rescued from these many problems. Now, as I covered last week, world peace is coming. Righteous government is coming. God's government. The reign of Jesus Christ and the bride, the first fruits, who become the bride of Christ. That is coming to this earth, and soon. But there's no administration, no political party that's going to save the United States from all of these dire problems, from all of these evils, from all of this division. But be assured that righteous leadership is coming. When we come back, we'll just look through some of the statements from America's founders, the founding fathers, and what we're seeing happen today. I mean, they prophesied of it. You could say. They warned us about where everything would go if we got away from the God of the Bible, religion, and morality. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us. It's another week, so we need some more comments to read later on this week. Send those to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I mentioned about the founders' belief, the founders' beliefs that the United States had been established on religion and morality, and in so many ways, I mean, that was the key early on to America's greatness. Of course, there's more to the story, as Herbert Armstrong covers in his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Those that have read that book know about the 2,520-year delay or suspension of the many blessings that God had promised to Abraham to pour out upon our peoples. And so God, keeping his promise, he started lavishing upon us all of these blessings, the United States and Britain, at or around about the time 1800, a little over two centuries ago. All of this wealth, this prosperity, this power. And as Mr. Armstrong covers in his book, retaining those blessings, holding on to all of that prosperity and power, depended on our behavior. And in that sense, religion and morality had a lot to do with America's wealth and power and influence. And that early history, what happened there in the late 1700s, the War of Independence, the Continental Congress coming together during that revolution. I think it was 55 founding fathers who attended that constitutional convention in 1787. And then the Constitution coming out from that, becoming the supreme law of the land in 1789. And so many of these fathers, these founding fathers, who viewed the nation, who viewed the establishment of the United States as something that came from God. Some of these men even considered America to be like a new promised land. William Bennett wrote in his book, Our Sacred Honor, "What made this country different from all others was a prevalent belief that God played a direct and active hand in founding a people like the Jerusalem of old, America's new Jerusalem, was to become God's promised land to the oppressed, an example to all humankind. Boy, this is like something right out of the Bible. And Bennett's point there is that early Americans saw God's hand in this. They saw God's hand in the creation of their nation. They saw God's hand in the writing of the U.S. Constitution, in the character of nations. Angelo Codavilla, he says, early Americans had a tendency to equate themselves with the children of Israel. Nowhere else in Christendom was the Old Testament read as much and the notion of God as lawgiver so widespread. Nowhere else. There's no place else quite like America in that sense. Ben Franklin, one of the oldest of the founders, he too saw the parallels between early America and Old Testament Israel. This is from Joshua's Altar by Milt Mauchline, who wrote that Benjamin Franklin described the independent colony on America's shores as God's new Israel and proposed that the great seal of the United States should depict Moses with his rod uplifted and the Egyptian armies drowning in the sea. Well, and look at these great leaders of old, as we covered in the last segment, Moses and Joshua, or Samuel after the period of Judges, that dreadful period. Or before that, Joseph in the book of Genesis. Look at these leaders. Look at how important it was for them to live righteously. These are the leaders that America's founders were hearkening back to when they were drawing up the documents that would establish this new nation. So many of them realized that they were involved in something much, much bigger than themselves. They knew that this was a great nation being born. They recognized the hand of God. Behind this, this is from the Encyclopedia Britannica, on the idea of manifest destiny. It says here that manifest destiny was often used by American expansionists to justify U.S. annexation of Texas, Oregon, New Mexico, and California, and later U.S. involvement in Alaska, Hawaii, and the Philippines. Well, today that's seen as a great evil. But back at that time, they felt like this was of God, this expansion. And who can deny the power and the influence, whether looking at the United States or the British Empire? If you haven't gone through the United States and Britain in prophecy yet, now's the time. Now's the time to go through it, because what we're seeing happen in the U.S. and Britain today, it's all discussed right there in those last chapters of the United States and Britain in prophecy. All of those blessings being taken away. They surely are being taken away. And no leaders are out there. None of the politicians are out there talking about these great evils, unless it's something that they alone have the power to fix. We've referred to this article by Paul Johnson from back in 1999. I mean, it's almost 20 years old now. But Johnson's saying both in Virginia, he's talking about the founding of America, both in Virginia and in New England to the north, the colonists were determined, God-fearing men, often in search of religious toleration denied them at home, who brought their families and were anxious to farm and establish permanent settlements. They put political and religious freedoms before riches. Thus took shape the economic dynamo that eventually became the United States, an experiment designed to establish the rule of God on earth. How about that for a noble beginning? An experiment designed to establish God's rule on earth? What a goal that was. The goal was, hey, if God's ruling, then we've got to obey his commands. Religion and morality. George Washington said, the foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality. That's the foundation. That's the rock-solid slab underneath the structure. The pure and immutable principles of private morality. Years later, in his farewell address, Washington said, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. This is what leads to prosperity. You've got to have the religion and the morality underneath it. These were the footings of America's national policy. These were the principles at the heart of the U.S. Constitution. And before that, the Declaration of Independence. In our booklet, Character in Crisis, we wrote to him, speaking of Washington, religion and morality were not optional, they were essential. At least if the United States was to experience success, prosperity, and peace. I mean, if we're going to keep these blessings that have been bestowed upon us, here are the essential building blocks. Religion and morality. John Adams, the second U.S. president, he said, statesmen may plan and speculate for liberty, but it is religion and morality alone which can establish the principles upon which freedom can securely stand. He said, the foundation of national morality must be laid in private families. That's the building block of society. That determines the strength of the nation. Mr. Armstrong wrote about this in The Missing Dimension in Sex as well. The families. If the families are right side up, if God's family government is present on the local level, in the communities, in the families, well, that's where the real strength of the entire nation resides. We heard a message over the weekend on the indispensable role of the father. The father in the family. I mean, he's pretty much been erased out of the family in our very modern society. And yet, as I was pointing out in class this morning, look at the way he's long been erased out of traditional Christianity, where it's just all about coming to Christ. It's all about receiving Christ. It's all about looking to Christ. And yet your Bible says that you can't even come to Christ unless the Father calls you and brings you there. The whole gospel message revolves around the Father's role. And well, today there's a great conspiracy against that role, including one against the role of God the Father. Well, you go back far enough in America's history, just to return to some of these statements, and you see clearly, from John Adams, from George Washington, that the U.S. Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. And we're no longer moral or religious. And so you have some commentators, as I read to you in the first segment, beginning to wonder if 1776 was a mistake. Look at the level of corruption. Look at the spectacle. The spectacle that the U.S. political scene is today. Well, and then you look at what the founders said, and it shouldn't come as a surprise. James Madison said, we have staked the whole future of American civilization not on the power of government, but upon the capacity of each and every one of us to govern ourselves according to the Ten Commandments. That's what we've staked our future on. That's what the future of America rests on. whether or not each and every one of us can govern ourselves according to the Ten Commandments, according to the Bible. Well, I could go on. There's one statement after another statement after another statement. A couple more here from Character in Crisis. He said that while the constitutional law of liberty allowed Americans complete freedom to do as they pleased, religion prevented them from doing that which was immoral and unjust. That's in response to a statement Alexis de Tocqueville made, the historian and philosopher who wrote about the United States in the 1800s. And what made America great? I mean, you have all these freedoms. You have this law of liberty that allowed Americans complete freedom to do as they please. But it's religion that prevents us from doing what's immoral, what's unjust. We're living in a different America today, that's for sure. All of these freedoms, and look at the evils, the gross evils that are so rapidly spreading. My father said in the booklet, Character in Crisis, as far as human government goes, the United States started out about as right as any government man has ever produced. Critics today can say what they will about why it started right, but the founding fathers all seem to be in perfect agreement on the issue. The country began in fertile ground because it was founded upon religion and morality. These are the two fundamental building blocks upon which America was built. They were all in agreement on this. They sure were. They all agreed. These were the building blocks. Now, before that, of course, as I say, America's greatness was determined, for the most part, by God fulfilling his promise to Abraham. And America became as powerful and as influential as it was because of these promises, but also because of this approach, because of these views of the founding fathers, because of their respect for the law of God, because they valued religion and morality. Let me just conclude over in Jeremiah 23. Here again, you come back to the United States and Britain in prophecy. So many exciting prophecies and history in there that talk directly about why the British Empire became what it was around the world. And the same with the single greatest superpower in the history of the world. And yet there's so many prophecies there as well. Very sobering prophecies that talk about what happens when nations that have been blessed by God turn their backs on God, shake their fist at God, and put all of their sins on display, as I covered with you last week. We're so proud of evil. We're so proud of sin. We see it now as a point of a strength. This is a good thing that there's so much corruption, that we have leaders that can operate into the dark areas, the gray areas. Jeremiah 23, and this is verse 14, it says, I have seen also in the prophets of Jerusalem a horrible thing. They commit adultery, they walk in lies, they strengthen also the hands of evildoers, that none does return from his wickedness. They are all of them unto me as Sodom, and the inhabitants thereof as Gomorrah. It's the same thing it says early on in the book of Isaiah. The same message. Look, God says, I see the sins, and it's appalling to me. It's like they're putting Sodom and Gomorrah on display. And God says in verse 20, the anger of the eternal shall not return until he has executed, until he has performed the thoughts of his heart. In the latter days, you shall consider it perfectly. You see, this prophecy is not for Jeremiah's time. It's for the latter days when we'll be able to consider it perfectly. Consider these prophecies perfectly. Because they're now being fulfilled. As God sends the rod of correction to correct our peoples for these many evils, for the evils of Sodom and Gomorrah. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets better, but when it gets better, when that new government is finally set up and established, what a perfect and righteous government it will be. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email the program. You can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.